Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the answer.
Welcome to Stories from the Heart. I'm Sandra McDevitt. Have you ever jumped to a conclusion before you knew all the facts? In today's story, that is just what happens. One woman's gossip before all the facts were known could have had disastrous consequences. Stay tuned to another Stories from the Heart to listen to a lesson all of us could benefit from before the same thing happens to us. The lilac bushes on the rectory lawn were blurred by approaching darkness as Mrs. Keene passed. She had an uncompromising jaw that was usually in motion, and the eyes of a detective, which came abruptly to rest on a white substance lying on the rectory walk. Pausing, Mrs. Keene shifted the bundles that represented her Saturday marketing and looked around her. Stooping, she tested the white substance with an inquiring finger, just as she had suspected, rice. Rice meant a wedding. A recent wedding, too. Neither the sexton nor Mrs. Brady, the pastor's housekeeper, would have let the stuff lie around. But why the significant detail of rice before the rectory and not at the church? A wedding that took place in the rectory meant, her jaw tightened, a mixed marriage. Little spurts of indignation bubbled within Mrs. Keene's mind. A mixed marriage had taken place without her knowledge? Now who on earth? Mentally, she reviewed the parish eligibles. Mary Connor, Grace Penderville, Helen Fisk. Her memory flashed like a searchlight upon an incident of 3 weeks earlier. Pretty, vivacious Helen coming down the rectory steps with Walter Hendrickson, both flushed and laughing. Oh, that stiff of a Helen, leading on a good lad like the O'Brien boy and throwing him over for Walter Hendrickson, who was no better than an atheist. He didn't believe in a personal God, well, whatever that meant. Though goodness knows it wasn't surprising he turned out that way, what with his weak, silly mother marrying that infidel of a father, against all warnings, and her dying when the boy was born. But Helen, of all people! Mrs. Keene's large oblong face grew pink. She'd a good mind to go straight to the Fisks and tell them what she thought of them. But probably the person interviewed was Helen's friend, the Larkin girl. Up three flights of stairs to Miss Larkin's furnace room pounded Mrs. Keene. Arlene Larkin had been turning the hem of a dress from which the store tag still dangled. Mrs. Keene wished the price tag were clearer. Her young hostess was not pretty, but she was sweet-looking, thought Mrs. Keene, slim, blonde girl with large gray eyes. Obviously, she was puzzled at the call. Now, aren't you and Helen Fisk mean, she said coyly, not telling anyone about the wedding? Arlene was either a good actress or totally in the dark. Her start of surprise seemed genuine. Didn't you know she married Walter Hendrickson today? This time there was no doubt of the girl's agitation. Sudden crimson spotted her pale cheeks. Not Helen. Oh, no wonder you're shocked, approved Mrs. Keene. An atheist like him. And with the fine religious training that girl had, it's a wonder that Father Bowers permitted it. But like it is not, they'd have chased off to City Hall if he hadn't. Arlene Larkin did not reply. She slid one hand along the polished top of her workbox, back and forth. Her gray eyes had gone curiously black. She sat motionless for a long time, her new dress crumpled in her lap. Walter Hendrickson married. Walter had said to her shyly, I can believe in a God when I'm with you, Arlene. Who had told her other things, things that sent sweet, foolish rushes of emotion over her whenever she remembered them. And he had sneaked off and married her best friend. Arlene's thoughts traveled in weary circles. She recalled the early days of her acquaintance with Walter Hendrickson. To her, he had seemed a wistful figure, an orphan like herself, a lonely boy under the surface of proud, indifferent reticence. Once she had ventured to give him a Sacred Heart medal, and his swift gratitude had surprised and touched her. She thought of another day further back when she had left her hometown to seek work in the city. She'd been a stranger then, and Helen, her only friend, had been kind and sweet to her and made her forget her homesickness. Well, this is what people were really like. They turned on you when you stood in their way. Friendship, loyalty, honor, love, empty words, all of them. A rap of the door shattered her reflections, and a voice announced that a Mr. Hendrickson was calling on Miss Larkin. Why had he come now? To explain? Apologize? Well, she wouldn't see him. Oh, yes, she would, and show him how little she cared. I didn't think you'd leave Helen so soon after the ceremony. His eyebrows drew up in amazement. You knew then? Oh, is that from Helen or Father Bowers? Neither, someone else, no matter who. Well, I wanted to tell you in the beginning, he said lamely, but Helen begged me not to. Are you angry, Arlene? Oh, men were strange. They took your heart and twisted it between their hands and then asked, are you angry? Not at all, said Arlene. It's no affair of mine. His expression changed. This isn't like you, Arlene. You are always gentle and sympathetic. I thought you'd understand. She stared at the faded sheet of music. The song was Roses of Yesterday. She would always hate that song. Walter, you better go back to Helen, she said. I don't know what brought you here. As you please, he returned stiffly, and probably you'll want this back. A gleam of silver lay in her hand, the Sacred Heart medal she had given him long ago. She heard the outer door bang behind him. Arlene pressed her head down upon the yellow keys. Her lips trembled on words that were part prayers and part incoherent murmurs of pain. The house was still. No one came near her. Presently, she rose and went out. Now, along the boulevard, with firm, cheery stride, paced Patrolman Lawrence O'Brien, his nightstick spinning from his right hand in erratic circles. He liked this section of the boulevard, which was part of his beat. A sigh expanded his broad chest, and his sunburned face grew serious under the visored cap. He was afraid of what all gentlemen dread, a thundering no, point blank from the mouth of a woman. Well, Larry O'Brien, who had faced bandit guns unflinchingly, was helpless before the saucy blue eyes of Helen Fisk. If I could only get up my courage, he mused wistfully, and tell her how he adored her. But he couldn't. Suppose she got mad. He was passing through a darkened stretch of the boulevard, and from a bench a few feet distant, shaded by a knot of thick trees, came a sound that stopped him in his tracks. It was a woman who was huddled on the bench, bareheaded, her face hidden in her hands, and her slim body quaking with sobs. He'd better look into this. Good Lord, Arlene Larkin. He touched her shoulder with awkward tenderness. Arlene, it's Larry. What's the matter? She raised her head. Her eyes were scarlet-rimmed and swollen and gazed at him vaguely as though at a stranger. I've been walking. I don't know how long, she sobbed. I went crazy, I suppose, when I heard about Helen marrying Walter Hendrickson. Helen marrying? Under the rows of brass buttons, Larry's heart thumped hollow. Arlene dabbed forlornly at her eyes. I was a beast to spring it on you that way, Larry. I've been so immersed in my own troubles, I forgot about you and Helen. The sunburned face had assumed a grim expression, like a mask. Maybe you better tell me about it, Arlene, Larry said, and she did. Well, we can't do anything about it tonight, he said. But Helen usually goes to High Mass at 12:15. We'll see her there tomorrow. He hesitated, stabbed by reflection. Helen might be far away tomorrow on her honeymoon. Anyway, we'll see her mother and get the story straight. Now you go on home. Patrolman O'Brien resumed his pacing of the boulevard, while beside him stalked the ghost, of a slain dream. The rectory reception room was a homey spot, particularly in the early afternoon, before the introduction of the shadows of the church spire cut off the sunshine from the side windows. Father Rauer's attention was drawn to the small group talking in front of the church. Young O'Brien, Arlene Larkin, Little Fist Girl. The white-haired priest sighed and then smiled again. The group had apparently made up its collective mind and was approaching the rectory. Storm coming, he decided, as he faced his guests in the reception room. Arlene, slim, pale, and distant, sank into a leather chair with a brief greeting. Larry remained standing, his sandy head ominously high, and Helen immediately plunged into excited speech. Father, what kind of ceremony did you perform yesterday? She demanded. I baptized Walter Hendrickson, and you, Helen, were a sponsor. And I hope that's definite enough for you two idiots, said Helen. They had an idea. You married us, Father. Oh, don't speak yet, either of you. I discovered about Walter's taking instructions. I'm good at getting information out of people. He said he hadn't told you yet. Then I thought of a plan. Once I read about a man who joined the church, unknown to his wife, and one morning at Mass, she went to communion, and he got up and went with her. And I thought that was so beautiful and romantic. Besides, I wanted to be a sponsor. Walter's, I mean. Oh, please forgive me, Arlene said. You'd better say that to Walter. The poor boy's crazy about you. Besides, he's leaving. His firm is transferring him to San Francisco. He wanted to tell you that last night. That and a few other things. Stars sprang into Arlene's eyes. She hopped to her feet and went to the door. Hear, hear, laughed the father. Where are you going? San Francisco, was the reply. And now for you, Mr. O'Brien, she said. Don't you dare speak to me again. I never was so insulted in my entire life. Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. But I do, said Officer Lawrence O'Brien. He reached out with a great hand and drew her, squirming and protesting, into his arms. Father Bauer stood at the front door as the two went down the walk between the lilac bushes, arm in arm. Oh, it's a grand world, Mrs. Brady, said Father Bowers. Never been a finer day, nor a finer looking dinner, and a nice rice pudding that I see before me. Mrs. Brady beamed. Your favorite dessert, Father. But you came mightily near not to getting it. On my way home from the store last night, I almost ran into that two-faced Mrs. Keene, saving your presence. And I was in such a hurry to dodge her that I just dashed in through the front door and I spilled, well, half of my bag of rice. Thank you for joining us on Stories from the Heart. Today's story, The Proof is in the Pudding, was written by Ethel Seeley and published in Ave Maria Magazine. To listen again, go to the Ave Maria Radio Archives. To reach me, email Sandra at AveMariaRadio.net. Stories in the Heart is recorded in the studios of Ave Maria Radio. I'm Sandra McDevitt. May God bless the rest of your day.
Missed a show? Not sure if it came from Ave Maria Radio? Go to AveMariaRadio.net. A list of shows and hosts are there. And if you find the show you're looking for, you can hear the whole thing again by going through the Ave Maria Radio audio archives. For years, we've recorded nearly every show from Ave Maria Radio. Just click on the audio archives message located at the center of our homepage. Now you even have more reasons to become a radioactive Catholic by going to AveMariaRadio.net.
The Dominican Order exists to spread the gospel by preaching and teaching, and so it is also centered upon the study of sacred truth. I'm Father Benedict Kroll, and I'm the Vocation Director for the Eastern Province Dominican.